Well, now I'd like to welcome our guest to the programme, and it's Paul Atterbury.
Hello, Peter.
Many of you, of course, know from the Antiques Roadshow and much more. Paul, lovely to have you with us again. For this session of In Conversation, we're going to be reflecting on Christmases of the past.
Gosh, how long have you got?
Yes, we might have to serialise this and put this part two on next Christmas, I think. But,
do you mean our past or the past generally?
A bit of a mix, really, I think. Yes. So would you like to start off perhaps with a few of your reflections looking back on Christmases of the past, unwrapping presents and whatever?
Yes. I mean, I think I'll go back a bit further. I mean, of course, Christmas is a relatively recent idea, as it is today.
Yes, you know,
as
yes,
ever,
it is.
We can thank Queen Victoria and Prince Albert for it, who gave us the Christmas tree and the Christmas card and the whole sort of palaver of Christmas. And particularly present giving, initially really just to children, and then it grew into what it is now. But I've always been intrigued by mid-19th century views of an interior with a Christmas tree and candles and all that sort of thing. And you look at it and you think, that's where it comes from. Mm. You know, it hasn't really changed. And I suppose, you know, I've always had slightly mixed views about it. There was a chapter in my life when I made sure I had a job that made me work on Christmas Day, because I just didn't want to be part of it. Mm. And I had for a couple of years, I had a job in a pub as a barman. This is when I was quite young, obviously. And I realised, as the days went by, it was one of the most unpleasant ways of spending Christmas Day known to man, you know, dealing with riotous, generally drunk, and often unpleasant people, very demanding. And they always, to me, seemed to be, they were ordering really obscure drinks, because it was Christmas Day and all that. And I remember one person came and he said, I want a whiskey Mac. And I thought, oh, I don't know what that is. And they were too busy to ask. And I decided it was a whiskey and a Mackeson mixed together, which, of course, was completely disgusting and wasn't what he wanted at all. So it was all full of those sort of moments of drama. But, you know, it was what I wanted to do. Another time I worked for a few years for a puppet company, theatre company, and we were often on tour at Christmas. And so, of course, we'd be working on the stage, because in those days, you know, there were Christmas Day performances as well as the run-up. And I remember a Christmas in Darlington in the snow. And, of course, we had those really dreadful, absolutely typical theatrical digs, B&Bs of the most basic order. And it was cold and the snow and the rain. And the theatre was fine, but, I mean, the audiences were never that big. And there was always a rule that if you had more people behind the stage than in the auditorium, you didn't need to do the show.
Right.
And I'm afraid that happens.
And that happened, yes. Oh.
But it, overall, I mean, yes, I mean, I remember it as we all do, as a family occasion.
Mm.
And I had a slightly tempestuous family in the sense that not everybody really got on.
Mm.
And we all came together at Christmas because that's what you did in those days. I wouldn't do it now. And there were always some drama always broke out between rival factions of the family. And I think this was, you know, you could, it's a sort of, it's what everybody knows. Mm. And I was aware from an early age that this wonderful celebration was actually overlaid with stresses and strains within a family circle.
Mm.
And I was very envious of friends who went off and had a wonderful time with a totally united family and they had Christmas as it should be.
Mm.
Whereas we were always, there was always stresses and strains, and I think everybody involved was very glad when the day ended and we could all go home.
Boxing Day, right.
Boxing Day.
I was just wondering about sort of early Christmas presents and the excitement of unwrapping
your present. Like most people of that, or most small children, I obviously believed it all. It took me a while to realise that actually it wasn't quite as presented. And I don't think we had a lot of money, but I mean, Christmas was always a treat, and it was the fact of these parcels piling up and red around the tree, and also, of course, getting a stocking.
And that was fun, stockings.
I think it was, and it went on into adulthood. You know, I still used to, my wife and I haven't done it for years, but I mean, there was a time when we used to do it. And it was fun doing it and filling it and thinking of things. And I think, you know, like most children, I had a very, very good time. I was given treats. I remember once I was given a dinky model of a bulldozer, quite a famous one, and it had a driver on it. And I remember I unwrapped this at sort of 3 a.m. in the morning or whenever it was, and I was so excited, so I rushed into my parents, who, of course, I was the last thing they wanted to see at 3 a.m. in the morning, but anyway. And as I went into their room, I tripped over carrying this bulldozer out of its box, and I fell in such a way that the driver's head very, very nearly went into my eye, but sort of made a dent here near on my eyebrow. And so there was howls of pain and lots and lots of blood. It was quite a dramatic start to the day.
That was a dramatic start. I recall opening a Hornby Gageo train set, I think about 1953. I think that was quite often a source of presents for
a train
children,
set,
wasn't it?
Yes.
Train sets.
I think mine, I had bits and pieces of a Hornby O-gauge, but it wasn't a train set. But I think when I was 7 or 8, a proper boxed train set arrived.
That's same with me, yeah.
And it was an early Triang, called Rovex. And it was, I don't know, a passenger, a Queen Elizabeth.
Princess, yes, it was always Princess a Queen Elizabeth engine, wasn't it? Yes.
And with a couple of carriages. And it was fun. And it had then, it was electric, but it was battery driven. And I remember my uncle, who was a great sort of, he wanted to be an engineer, but wasn't really that good at it. But he built a proper plug-in controller. And it was about the size of this desk. It was a huge thing, like the dimmers you've got here, with things that you could pull up and down.
Yes.
And it worked. And he said it was very difficult to build because at first he couldn't control the speed, and so it only went very fast. And so every time it came to a bend, the train just went straight on because it couldn't take the bend.
Take the bend, no.
I think whatever it's called, the rheostat had to be adjusted.
But
so it was a great surprise. But it was a vast thing. In a great sort of plywood box.
And that's really when the sort of the model railway thing sort of took off, really, wasn't it?
I think so, because it was. I remember it was very competitive at school. You know, what did you get? Oh, I got this one. Oh, I got a Hornby 00. And everybody thought, oh, lucky you, you know. Whereas we had lesser things. But, no, the train set was very important. And I remember another case, actually earlier, I was given a doll's house by my grandfather.
Right.
Who'd made it. And I remember opening it and thinking, oh, how odd. Even as a small child, I thought, you know, we were all conditioned to think that dolls' houses were for girls. And in fact, I really enjoyed it, you know, because it was there and you could play around with the furniture and everything like that. Whether it was a bit of early, whatever it is, equality conditioning, I don't know. But I can still remember the surprise, this huge box, which I tore into, and out came this homemade doll's house. And I don't know how he got that idea, but anyway, that's what happened.
Yeah. Another thing that used to make Christmas presents was Meccano sets, wasn't
it? Yes, that's right. There were certain standard things that boys got. And, you know, it's fine. It was all good fun. And I think, I mean, I've probably overstated the family dramas. And in fact, they were part of the whole excitement of the day. You know, who's going to shout at who today? You know, what's going to happen? Because to a child, it was all a wonderful sort of spectator sport. You know, I didn't find it particularly tense. No. I just found it bizarre. And of course, I assumed this is how all families behaved. It seemed to me perfectly normal. And it was only when I was at school and talking about it, I realised it wasn't like that at all for a lot of people.
Just to round off, one thinks Christmas time of a famous London big toy shop.
Hamleys.
Yes. Did you ever go into Hamleys?
Yes, I remember as a child being taken in and being completely amazed by this mass of stuff on several floors. I remember there was a big sort of central area and you could go on a balcony and look down. It's probably still there, same. And it was a sort of magic process of just looking at things that you knew you'd never have. And just wondering. And of course, the whole sort of thing about window shopping. I mean, Hamleys windows were famous, as were Fortnum and Mason's windows. And so you simply, I remember sometimes with particularly my grandmother used to take me, and we'd simply stand outside and look. Mm. Wouldn't necessarily go in.
No. This is Regent Street.
And so, because, I mean, she lived in South London, and I stayed there a lot. And a day in London was always a treat, not just at Christmas. You know, we'd set off from Surbiton and go on the train and go on the underground and do all those things. And often in the build-up to Christmas, she'd say, let's go and see the lights in Oxford Street. Yes. And look at the windows of the shops, because all the department stores then were fantastic in their windows. So I remember that very clearly.
Yeah. Well, some lovely reflections on Christmas's past. Thank you very much indeed, Paul, for joining us on our programme.
Thank you, Peter. Yeah.